The Farm in the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McRae. Perhaps you've heard about carbon programs that may pay farmers for certain conservation practices they use. How can you evaluate the options? What might be required in order to receive payments? What is the future of these programs, and how will they impact farmers in the future? It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, and it's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. It's time to rethink nitrogen. Pivot BioProven replaces nitrogen fertilizer with microbes that adhere to the crop's root system and apply nitrogen each day. Performance report data shows Pivot BioProven consistently outperforms synthetic nitrogen fertilizer year over year, providing corn growers improved yields and a more dependable nitrogen supply that isn't lost to the environment. To read the performance report, go to pivotbio.com. And for more information on Pivot BioProven, text PROVEN to 31313. If you're like me, you've probably heard, read, and seen several pitches for carbon programs out there that might pay farmers for some of the farming practices they use on their operation. Perhaps some of you are already involved in one of those programs. I think many of us wonder how we should evaluate the options and what is the true potential for getting paid for how we farm. Dr. Jeff Seal has been working with carbon programs for many years and has had a hand in creating the carbon program for Bayer. Not only does he know much about that specific initiative, of course, but his knowledge of the subject is broad, as he provides a good background on carbon credits and what the future may hold for these programs. I was interested to learn more about a topic we'll probably continue to hear more about going forward. Dr. Jeff Seal joins me. He is Director of Climate Policy and Strategy and a Science Fellow with Bayer. And Jeff, we're going to talk about carbon. And I think a lot of farmers hear this discussion about carbon. But why don't I start with this? Why should farmers be listening to this discussion about carbon? Because I think it's going to be something they're going to continue to hear more about. So make the case of why this discussion is so important for us to be listening to right now as farmers.
Yeah, Andrew, that's a really good question. And I think it simply boils down to the larger global discussion on climate change and how we address that issue. Folks may not realize that agriculture is the second largest contributor to global greenhouse gas emissions. And so, you know, there are lots of circles where folks see that and, you know, they think of agriculture, well, as part of the problem. And so I think, you know, it creates a real opportunity, though. It is true. It is part of the problem. But it creates the opportunity for us to think about how can we be part of the solution. I think that's the context of the discussion that's happening. And I think it's really critical for all of us in agriculture to really pay attention to that conversation and make sure that we insert ourselves into that conversation and bring a different perspective to that. And really, you know, I think our goal here is really to demonstrate, you know, that agriculture actually can be part of the solution.
So this is a bigger discussion, I'm sure, than just the United States. This would have to be worldwide. Why is it that this discussion is coming to a head right now then, and so many people are concerned? Is it just because we see effects of it, or what brings it to the forefront now?
Yeah, I think sort of the convergence of lots of different issues. You know, I think the focus on the Paris Climate Accord, the things that it's responsible for delivering, you know, that whole global conversation driven by the UN climate change folks. So I think there's that. I think our own domestic political, you know, environment, the incoming administration has clearly indicated that climate is going to be a focus across everything they do, including agriculture. And even during the campaign, we saw, you know, for the first time, very specific things mentioned in debates around cover crops. You know, it's like, did you ever think you would hear a candidate for president talk about cover crops in a presidential debate. So I think there's just this, you know, increased awareness and focus on the issue. I think the pandemic also caused us to start to think about these broader issues more closely. So I think it's just this sort of weird convergence of events that have happened over the last sort of year, 18 months, that have really, you know, sort of stimulated the conversation.
I know that we're going to get into some of these different carbon programs that are out there, and certainly Bayer has one. But before we do that, talk about how farmers then should view this. Because from what you've said, many of us would say, oh boy, this doesn't sound too good, because people are going to start telling me how I have to farm differently. But I'm betting you're going to say there are things that farmers can do to, in a sense, earn money for the practices perhaps they're already doing or could be doing. Would that be correct?
Yeah. So, you know, I think that's a legitimate concern that we have in agriculture, is how do we think about these problems, and how do we sort of become more proactive about them so that we can sort of head off any of those initiatives that try to dictate how farmers work their farms. So, you know, I think that's yet another reason why it's important that in the agriculture sector that we all sort of listen to the conversation and make sure that we're actually participating in the conversation. And as I think about from a farmer perspective, I think one of the things that we need to really emphasize is, you know, these things that we can do to remove carbon, participate in the carbon markets, they have other benefits as well, right? And so, and I think those sort of co-benefits around, you know, protecting the soil, less soil erosion, improvements in soil health, water retention leading to sort of crop resilience and, you know, these extreme weather environments and stuff, I think those are all things that you know, are highly beneficial to the farmer themselves. And so I think those added co-benefits, you know, bring that extra value to the farm as well. So I think there's multiple opportunities here for farmers to see, you know, benefits to their operations.
I've heard some people say that eventually we will look at carbon as another crop in a sense that we can sell. So we have corn or soybeans, but there'll be value for our carbon. Do you think that's where we're headed?
I hope that's where we're headed, because I think it sort of creates the opportunity, you know, if the soil carbon that we can sequester and keep in that soil, you know, there's no reason why it shouldn't be treated any differently than, you know, when you take your grain to the elevator to sell it, right? It's like, okay, here's something I've done. So instead of taking it to the elevator, you go through these market efforts and generate a carbon credit that can then be traded on a carbon market. And I think there'll be lots of creative and economically viable ways for that to evolve over the next coming couple of years. And so I think it's actually exciting, and it's a way, again, back to this, you know, how do we avoid dictating how farmers grow their crops? I think it's a way to sort of alleviate that by creating these opportunities.
Why don't you go ahead and get into the Bayer program for just a moment? Because certainly you've been around these issues for quite a while, and there are different programs out there, but what's Bayer's program? How will it work, and how do farmers then be a part of that?
Yeah, so the Bayer program is new. We just announced it this summer, and it's sort of undergoing a piloting phase. So we're testing out the system that we built over the last 4 or so years, looking for any gaps that we may have missed, or, you know, trying to improve our process to make sure that once these markets actually exist and are in place where these credits can be traded, that our system actually works. And so currently in the pilot phase, we've enrolled growers across the Midwest to work in corn and soy production. Instead of sort of worrying about the price of carbon, which is really low, and, you know, a compliance market doesn't really exist for the way we want to do these types of things in agriculture, we decided, at least in this pilot phase, that we're just going to pay a flat rate per acre, so $10 per acre, for the implementation of a new practice, whether it's a reduced tillage practice or complete no-till, or the implementation of cover crops. And so it's a focused effort at this point to make sure that we can sort of pressure test the system we've developed. We've seen outstanding interest from growers across the Midwest, so much so that we had to close the enrollment period a little earlier than we anticipated, and have created a waiting list for new enrollments in the next growing season. So that's sort of where we're at. We think that the flat fee per acre, at least in this pilot phase, is appropriate. It removes a lot of the uncertainty around a carbon price and what that does, and creates a simpler system for the farmer to navigate. And so I think as the program matures over the next year or two, and if these markets actually come into existence where they're accepted by the global standards organizations and they can be credits bought and sold and traded, the credibility and the verification that's needed to stabilize those markets, then I think the systems will evolve to take that into account.
Well, you brought up a topic I wanted to ask you about then, because right now, is there a standard way that we measure how much carbon then that we're sequestering? And through Bayer's program, then you're paying $10 per acre for some of these practices. Does Bayer then have a market to be able to sell those credits to somebody else? Or how is the system working right now?
So there are limited opportunities. Currently, some of the methodologies for measuring and accounting for the carbon are really sort of tedious and onerous. So you have to, take soil samples and send them off to a laboratory, have them analyzed. And, it's not cheap and compared to like the return sort of on the market value of carbon at this point. Most of the dollars in the system sort of get taken up by all of those steps in the middle, particularly on the measuring piece and on the verification side as well. And so, that creates challenges. And the good news is that this is sort of, as you mentioned at the beginning, it's one of these conversations that's really developed quickly over the last year, 2 years, that's caught the attention of these global standards organizations that sort of set the rules for how all of these things work. And, to their credit, they've realized that the systems that they had in place aren't really appropriate for these agricultural systems. And so there's been a lot of work in the last sort of 9 to 12 months by these organizations to really bring in experts in soil science, experts in agriculture, experts from the food companies as well, the commodity companies, to really start to look at what is meaningful standards in the agricultural sector to make things that create sort of credible carbon removals, because they need to be credible. I mean, that's one of the main concerns here. Is it real? How much is it? All those types of things. And so, I think over the next sort of 2 years, we'll start to see those things come into place, and hopefully there'll be sort of broad alignment across the sector itself that these things make sense from a science perspective as well as from an economics perspective. And that will then set us up, and by us, I mean agriculture, to have a market that people believe in and that will function.
One thing that I think some farmers will say, and I'm sure you've probably heard this, some may be a bit skeptical and say, let's say they have no-till or they've used cover crops, but it's only for those that are adopting new practices. And some folks will say, well, what about me? I'm ahead of the curve and I don't get any credit for it. So what about folks that are already in that boat? Could there be a disincentive to say, well, I'm not going to start doing these practices, or I'm going to quit doing them so then I can go back and get credit for starting to do them? Have you heard those type of arguments?
Oh, absolutely. Those are valid comments. And sort of my answer to that is those are the rules that are currently in place, because I think the whole concept is, we have to do more than what we've done before. And so that currently penalizes those folks who have done the right thing for the right reasons before. Now, all that having said, it also creates the opportunity for us to be kind of creative in addressing that problem. And one of the concepts that has come up in these conversations, and one that I think that is a good idea, is to reward those types of farmers by creating something akin to like a carbon storage fee, right? So let's assume you've been doing this for 10 years and can create a system where we go and we measure carbon that's stored in your farm. And as long as you continue to do the things that have stored that carbon over the years, create an incentive to reward that farmer, you know, financially for doing those things. And I think, number one, it helps to alleviate that concern. But number two, you know, these standards organizations, when it comes to soil carbon, one of the things they're used to thinking about trees. You go out and you can see the tree, you can knock on it, you can, you know, it's there. If it goes away because of a fire or insect damage and it dies, you know, you can see that. But when it comes to carbon and soil, those things don't work. You can't see it. And so they really worry about, is that carbon really still in the soil and is it permanent? And all those types of issues. And so I think some concept of a carbon storage fee may also have that benefit of giving them some level of comfort in, you know, the soil carbon is a valid carbon sink, which could in turn then lead to the credibility of the markets in general. So I think that's sort of just an example of some of the types of creative conversations that have been happening. And, you know, if there's anybody that has, you know, other suggestions for those types of things, so I'd certainly be interested in hearing about them and perpetuating that conversation as well.
Farmers out there are hearing from different companies that perhaps have some carbon type of programs, and I'm not wanting you to necessarily speak good or bad about others, but can you give kind of a general idea of perhaps what are some of the pluses and minuses or differences that farmers may see so they don't get into any situations they later say, well, I really wish I wouldn't have gone down that road? Or there's some things they need to be aware of between programs out there now?
Just sort of good general guidance is to really sort of, you know, look at the programs across all the programs. And I think one of the things that I would look for right off the bat would be, you know, things like transparency. How much do you know about what's going on in the program? How much does the program reveal? Is there a strong scientific foundation underneath the program itself? So the carbon removal, what's the science underneath that? You know, is it publicly available? Those types of things. And then there, these global standards organizations are now working with lots of these programs to start to give these sort of external validation. So I think if you look at a program and it has the external recognition of one of these global standards organizations, then I think that's also something that can give you a lot more comfort that what you're getting into is something that's not going to come back to bite you in the end. So, you know, I think, does it help the farmer? Is there science underneath it that's transparent and been reviewed by the broader community? And then does it have these sort of third-party certifications and recognitions? I think those are things that are critical for any program.
You've obviously been part of helping craft this program for Bayer. What are some of the things that you've liked about it? Because you've certainly had a hand in just what you talked about, making sure that was part of this program. So are there certain things that you say, I really like our program because it does this, and this is something that was needed in the marketplace?
Yeah, those three things that I just outlined were things that we developed early on sort of as our core principles, right? Because first of all, we feel strongly that the economics have to work for the grower themselves because they're the ones who are going to do the work. And so if the economics don't work, then rightly so, they won't do it. And, you know, if farmers can't participate and do these things, then you go back to the issue at the very beginning about agriculture is being seen as part of the problem and not part of the solution. So I think that part in connecting with growers early on, as we thought about these different projects and aspects of the program that we wanted to build, was really critical to make sure that we had that farmer connection. And then my background and training as a scientist, you know, that part about making sure that the science was really sound, making sure that after we had developed our models that we published them in journals, because that's sort of that extra level of external credibility to the work. So I think, you know, those two things to me were sort of the most exciting about getting involved in that, really making that connection to the farmer and then making that really strong connection to the science.
As we look down the road, do you think that most of these programs will be offered then through companies out there that are doing crop inputs? Will it be independent companies? Will it be a mix? Or how do you see things moving forward?
Well, I think that's one of the exciting things is like folks across the entire sector are getting interested. So I think, you know, some of the input folks and have been sort of the first movers, but if we talk more broadly about these types of things, you know, you start to see other folks within the ag supply chain come into the conversation and think about how they can participate, either joining other existing programs that are starting to emerge or whether they start to think about how do they create their own. So I think all of that momentum just from the broader conversation is sort of creating all of these opportunities. And I think while we've been at it for almost 5 years now, the space is still relatively young. And so I think more people will be coming into the conversation than I think other alternative ways of looking at carbon on farms will probably emerge. And it'll be interesting to see where those things go. So it's super exciting because it's getting a lot of attention. It's an emerging field. It's always a fun place to be as things start to come about. So I'm really looking forward to seeing where these things go over the next couple of years.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask. I mean, I guess you can give an opinion and you won't necessarily be wrong because it's an opinion, but if you looked 5-10 years down the road, will farmers then, do you think, be evaluating different programs? They'll have competition for who wants to pay the most for whatever practices they're going to do. Will that be driven by those companies or driven by consumers? Or how do you think things shake up as we look down the road?
I think in that sort of 5-year time frame, I think this will be a place where the market, the sort of emerging carbon market in agriculture will start to really have some level of confidence and credibility. And so I think that a lot of it will just be driven by those market forces. And then what's going to drive those market forces? Well, they'll sort of be these global climate agreements. So, you know, things like the airlines being required to offset their emissions from their flights. So that'll create a demand for some of these carbon removal credits. And then the consumer piece can't be discounted. You know, folks are much more keen on thinking about the environmental impact of things that they do, and the food supply is definitely one of those. And so I think they'll definitely come some influence from the consumer side as well as the food companies to meet the demands of their consumers. And so I think all of those things will come into play. And you know, it's not clear at this point which factors will play more of a role than others. But, you know, those are all kinds of things that we need to be aware of now and thinking about how do we make sure that we're in those conversations with those different folks as well so that we can make sure that we position ourselves as part of the solution.
Again, you've been around this for a while, and I know that you're very interested and excited about it. For farmers that look at it and say, oh boy, this is more change, and sometimes we don't like change, give us some reasons why we should be excited about it as well. I think there are exciting things, but still, I'm sure that there are some that say, I don't know if I like where this is headed. So why should we be looking at the positive side of it?
Yeah, and you know, I totally get that. It's like there's that strong mind to, you know, this is the way I've done it, and it works for me, and I've only got a limited number of opportunities to do this and be successful. And so that's completely understandable. And I guess, you know, it's sort of up to us as we build out these systems and create these systems that we're very upfront and open about, you know, what the benefits are. And I think when it comes to those types of issues, I think that's where we need to start talking more broadly just about these sort of added benefits that are more tangible to a farmer, right? So the whole idea of, well, here's just another commodity. Carbon in your soil is a commodity. That's one thing. And, you know, you can understand the finances of that and look at the market prices and all of that. But I think talking about, you know, how that also leads to these improvements in soil health and being able to So work with some of these commodity organizations and these growers groups to, you know, demonstrate these other benefits on farms, things like the Soil Health Partnership through the National Corn Growers Association. You know, they have projects to do exactly that and show some of the resilience. So show the improvements in soil health and those types of things. And I think that will help draw in some of those farmers that might be a little more skeptical and a little hesitant to want to experiment. So I think that's a place where we can definitely improve in that conversation.
Before we wind up, Jeff, tell folks how they can find out more about what you've been doing in that Bayer program, because we've discussed it a little bit. And even if they can't get in the program right now, I'm sure some people are going to be wanting to know more about what's going on.
Yeah. So, you know, we've worked to create a website where folks can go and learn more. So I think if you go to just bearcarbon.com, there's a place where you can go and get more information. Through that information, I think you can also join up on the waiting list. You know, we've tried to make it as simple as possible. Once you get enrolled in the program, as few clicks as possible to get signed up. And so, again, the website is just bearcarbon.com.
Very good. I appreciate the conversation. I know, again, it's something that we hear about as farmers, and we're going to continue to hear more. But you've been around it and know the science side of it and have been involved in creating a program. So it's just good to learn more. So I really appreciate the time.
It's my pleasure, Andrew. And again, as I said, if folks have any ideas, you know, feel free to pass those along. And we'll certainly try to get those into the broader conversation.
No doubt carbon programs will continue to be an important item for discussion on the farm. There are still many questions, but there are opportunities out there right now, and it's likely those opportunities will continue to grow. I know it's something we've been evaluating here on our farm as we gather information about what might work well for us. Thanks for listening. Be safe and enjoy the holidays as best you can in these times. Celebrate all we have, and may God bless you in this season. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.